So, my name is Ray Wright. I work for the University of Missouri Columbia. My talk today is expanding the role of cover crop systems while enhancing benefits in natural resources and wildlife. Basically, we can sum that up into conservation issues. I like to start out with definitions. And with the cover crop systems, the traditional definition had the concept of planting a green crop and erosion. Over time, as the popularity of cover crops arose, the definitions changed a little bit. So I pulled out a definition here from Penn State, and it did talk about erosion, it did talk about green cover, but it involved other things like organic matter, nutrient fixation. Weed suppression is something we're starting to hear more about. And then this one actually talked about beneficial insects. And I think that's kind of the segue of the direction I'm wanting to go. So the popularity of cover crops, they are becoming increasingly more popular. This was a SARE report in 2014-15, an annual report. And it shows they surveyed 1,300 farmers across the Midwest and asked them about whether or not they're using cover crops. And you can see that the popularity, as time grows on, kind of matches that change in that definition. So what are these farmers planting? Like I said, originally the definition was focused in on erosion control. And that's still a huge part. But if you look at this graph, and this was also out of the SARE report, 2014-15 acres, they make a statement of they're planting four or more mixtures in their mixtures. Now, why are they doing that? If it was just erosion, we'd be looking at one species that could adequately cover it. But the farming community is evolving and changing and starting to realize that these cover crops have got a lot more importance than just erosion. They're looking at it in the soil health benefit. They're also realizing that the multiple species add benefit there as well. So that talks a little bit about the farming community. Now we're going to move into the conservation type community. Aldo Leopold, which if you guys aren't familiar with his writings, he's considered the father of conservation. And in the 30s, he was talking about, really, we can't succeed in conservation without the ag community. In the 90s, Missouri's conservation department dedicated an entire division to working with farmers. Now, you would think that would be counterintuitive, but they actually decided it's time to really focus in on the farming community. And then just to show that I'm a little bit worldly, I went ahead and pulled an Iowa statement up there. And they've got a lot of issues with the nitrates and a lot of wildlife issues, same problems we have in Missouri, maybe a little more intensified. But they're also realizing they're not going to succeed without farmers. But when we talk about conservation concepts, we got a paradigm shift going on here. Now, this is traditional principles in conservation management. More bang for your buck theory. When they go in and they want to look at improving wildlife or improving something through conservation methods, they look at critical habitat. It's got to have critical habitat. It's got to have quality habitat within there. They want to manage multiple species at one time, not just one species. But if there is a species of concern, they're wanting to really focus in and make sure that's something that can be highlighted and succeed. And then there's that cost-benefit ratio. As each one of these things increase, they're going to be more apt to put their efforts towards it. These five photos here are actually some species of concern in Missouri and elsewhere. So our Department of Conservation has been incredibly successful. We have citizens out there that voted in a 1/8 of 1 cent sales tax, and it keeps getting renewed. We've been able to do quite a bit of good, mainly because of our citizenship, because if you look at our land area, the Conservation Department owns about 2% of Missouri. They figured out in the 80s that we need to start looking at private land a little bit more, and the CRP programs, as they came about, that accounts for about another 2% of Missouri. So the conservation efforts at More Bang for the Buck's been basically working on 4% of our state, and we've been very successful. But this is traditional management, historic conservation management. We have old growth forests, native prairies, and then that CRP program to my left, your right. So that's our traditional way of conservation. But this kind of gets to the point of what we're looking at. How do we break that audience and get the conservation component to work on private lands as they are? As agronomists, you look at this and you'll see this is an Iowa research farm on the right, and it looks very well kept. As an agronomist, you'd be proud to have that photo posted as this is what I'm doing. We all know that the center picture is not really good, but when prices go up, tree lines go down, habitat disappears, water quality can degrade from that. And then that other picture, we're looking at basically a field ready for planting in the spring. But the two different visions here, in the eyes of conservationists, each one of these is incredibly bad. In eyes of an agronomist, it's not so bad. They're prepping for the next year. And I think this is where our success is going to lie. And that's why I got this slide up here. Bolson, in 2008, and I agree with these statements, he made the comment that our insect population, our pollinators and bumblebees, are degrading because of the loss of habitat, agriculture. And that's correct. These insects need to have diversity in their area. When you have crops, corn, beans, and wheat, it's challenging to have something there for wildlife. We have a magazine in Missouri from the Missouri Department of Conservation, and they make the statement that, you know, farmers are well-minded about conservation, but conservation takes a back seat when it comes time to make a dollar bill. And that is correct, too, because farming is a profitable organization. We are there farming to make a living, to feed the world. But on the flip side, if you look back at my last slide, the slide previous, there's that cost-benefit ratio. The conservation really won't move heavily on something unless it gets more bang for the buck. So they're driven by the dollar as well. And I had to look long and hard to find something that actually brought in cover crops and wildlife. And finally, I ran into an article of Zach Eddy, and he basically tied it together. You know, we plant something green on the ground for soil health benefits to meet what the farmers are after. This will ultimately benefit our wildlife. So we'll go back to Missouri. Missouri has corn, beans, and wheat. Those are our big crops. Corn and beans are definitely our major crops. Wheat, I think, is an opportunity for us. And the reason I think it's an opportunity is because that's about 8% of Missouri. Corn and beans, if you're dealing with cover crops, you realize there's challenges to get the crops in, get them established, and get them to do what they need to do to increase the soil health. That's a huge issue. And I think coming at it for a conservation or wildlife view, saying I want to try to work with systems in the corn and beans, really puts a lot more stress on the system. But wheat is one of those crops that a lot of our farmers hate to plant. They don't like the profit margins. And then after the wheat's done for the season, they have to either chemical it to keep the weeds down, mow it, or disc it in. All of which are not very good for the diversity and keeping wildlife around, but it's also a cost for the farmers. Now, they can double crop, and that works in some parts of our state, and other parts of the state it doesn't, but it's quite a bit of risk. And I think right here is our greatest opportunity. I've got a slide on the right with the summer cover crop mix. And with that slide talking about the critical, the habitats that are needed, we plant cover crop mixes that'll flower early. Buckwheat's one that'll come in. We'll get sunflowers in there. So we provide a nectar source for the pollinators. Also, we plant different structure heights in plants as well. And as you can see down here in the middle, that's our summer cover crop going into the winter. Now, as a wildlife person, you would look at that and say, well, you know what? We can have critters using that. That would be a benefit as compared to the other side where it's getting prepped for planting. This meets the soil quality, the soil health benefits that the farmer is shooting for, and it's also something we can easily merge. But I guarantee you, I've had many people come up to me and say, this just won't work. This is, you're nuts. So with that, we started to look for funding sources and do some studies. And out at Bradford Research Farm, we got a grant from the National Wildlife Federation, and they wanted us to look, basically cast a wide net. Let's see what's out there. And one of the first questions is, well, if we plant these cover crops, will wildlife use them? And this is a cage exclusion study where we have several different types of cover crop systems, whether it's corn, beans, or some other theoretical thoughts that we were wanting to do. And basically with this one, whenever you put a cage to exclude wildlife, you had higher yields. So that told us, yes, wildlife's grazing. The deer, the rabbits are utilizing this. Now, I could go into a little bit more detail if we had time to talk about this, of species selection. But this tells us, and it's not statistically different, but just on face value, most generally, the harvest outside the cages is less than what's inside the cages. So, in my mind, yeah, they're using it. Now, we also do several quail call counts, and as I said earlier, this is a species of concern in Missouri. This is a summer call count where we go to specific points, and I'll explain this graph as quick, or this chart as quick as I can. The Britt Farm, Bradford Farm, Associated Electric Farm all have cover crops on them. The Associated Electric Farm just started that year. The B County Farm is just a farm down the road that doesn't deal with cover crops, has forest edge, has traditional farming practices on it. And then the other one is that Seat Farm. That's actually a seat conservation area, an area that focuses in on trying to promote wildlife and quail in particular. And as you can see here, we are statistically significant that we have more birds where we have cover crops associated. They like change. They like that new habitat coming in. And the fun jab with this is the Seat Farm is a conservation area, and we're beating them as far as numbers of birds with what we're doing. The Boone County Farm, there's just not very many birds on there. And that one's about 5 miles away from our cover crop fields, which is definitely in the range. All right, so we got it documented that, yeah, they'll eat the food, they're using it. The next step, one of my coworkers made the comment, well, Ray, if you start providing this habitat and quail start using it and ground birds start using it for nesting, aren't you just going to kill them with the farm equipment? Never thought about that at all. But, I mean, these are kind of the issues we need to work through. So through an internship with Columbia College, I have students that come out and they place clay pigeons out in our cover crop fields. And this is just 1 year's data. I have 3 years of this, and it's very similar. But what we're finding out is we paint these clay pigeons camouflage, place them out there, and then the poor kids have to find them later on and identify if they're broke or not. But we paint them that way so the tractor drivers don't avoid them. And we just plant and we spray and we put our crops in. So when we're planting beans in, we use a 15-inch planter. And we're getting about 15% success rate on those nests. When we do corn, it's about 30%. And this is consistent with the other years. Now that, to some people, sounds terrible, but the natural mortality, nest mortality of quail is about 30 to 40%. So we're right in line. But the biggest thing about this is the Missouri Department of Conservation has 4% of Missouri, and all of a sudden we add an option of that wheat, those wheat fields, an 8%. That's 12%. We've been very successful with the ground we've had. I think there's a great opportunity. But that reaching out to that audience, and my audience is the conservation, it's very challenging. You've got people that made their careers looking at a traditional way. So just before I finish up real quick, those, as we were checking our quail nest, I don't know the species of those birds, but they are ground nesting birds, just like quail would in our plots. And then we had plenty of birds that were nesting in the canopy of what we planted. So yeah, they are using it. And with that, I can take one question, or we can talk at the end. Thank you. Yes.
So, let me be clear. Do these farmers get any kind of financial benefit from these cover crops that have wildlife? That could be very meaningful, you know, of course, if you could basically cover crop seed or give some other things.
Absolutely. The question was, do they get any financial benefit for putting in these type of crops for wildlife? Well, right now in Missouri, I know, we have a program where they're doing a system where we're paying for the seed The farmer pays a certain amount, and it's like one of the typical government programs, but it's based on soil health, and it has some restrictions that are challenging. But really, for any of these new concepts to succeed, we're going to have a compensation. One of the theoretical things that I mentioned in here just in passing was the CRP, the EDGE, put plant and cover crops for EDGE instead of native plants. Well, that's already in the farmer's machine. They're planting. If they leave that 30 foot out and they just put their seed out there, you'll still get that benefit for wildlife. But it's not realized by the entities who will be running those. And that's the challenge I have, because I can show some data. I can't prove it, you know, beyond a doubt, but it's getting them on board to say, yeah, this is important and we see this can be a success. We'll have time for questions afterwards. I don't want to take too much of Tim's time.